and his new book just released called The Lost Hegemon, Whom the Gods Would Destroy. And it's just my distinct pleasure to welcome William Engel. How are you, sir?
Very well, thank you, Mike.
And I should also note that Joseph P. Farrell is a big fan of yours and cites your articles from New Eastern Outlook often in his video reports. And we're big fans of Joseph P. Farrell as well. I'm often corrected by listeners when I refer to the New World Order, as of course George Bush Sr. did, some 220 times as president. And I'm often told by my readers and viewers that it's nothing more than an old world order, a group of banking families, oligarchs, and intelligence agencies that have been in control for centuries. Does that pretty much sum it up?
Well, I think you can go back 5,000 years in the history of debt if you want to talk about the world order of the plutocracy and oligarchy, the control of every political process by a tiny self-selected elite and so forth, a patriarchy, the American patriarchy, David Rockefeller, George Soros, Bill Gates, people like this. And the game is essentially the same. They ruin nations. The Roman Empire collapsed 400 AD for much the same reasons that the American century is collapsing today. It's internal rot because the banks, step by step over the past, and this is the theme really of my book, The Gods of Money. It's not just the 2008 financial crash and subprime mortgage mess, but it's the history of how America was hijacked in a silent coup d'etat by Wall Street bankers. And they just spit their tongue out at the American population and say, you can't do anything. We're too big to fail. And that's you can go back in history to every failed great nation, and it's always due to this internal rot because of usury, because of the misuse of interest and money and banking. The state gives away control of printing money, the most precious sovereign quality that a state can have. U.S. did it in 1913 when Woodrow Wilson committed treason against the Constitution and signed the Federal Reserve Act. But that's basically the case. It's a very old world game. It goes back to the Babylonians. You can pick any example you want. I prefer the Romans because it's culturally so similar to the internal rot of American culture in my lifetime, since I can visibly feel it since the 1950s when I grew up.
Yeah, well, let me ask you this, though. It feels like we've gone off the rails at a faster and faster pace just over the past decade, you know, since 9/11. When do you think which silent coup do you think was most effective? You mentioned the one in 1913 with the establishment of the Federal Reserve. Certainly the bankers have done a heck of a job enslaving this nation. We're now $19 trillion in debt. I've often cited the assassination of President John F. Kennedy as another nail in the coffin of our constitutional republic. Was that the most effective silent coup, or was it 9/11 itself that really put the nail in the coffin?
I would agree with all,
yeah.
If I may. The assassination of JFK, I mentioned this in an article that should be out in the next days on NEO. The assassination of Kennedy was a major turning point in the country. The networks who committed that assassination included Alan Dulles' networks at the CIA. It included Carlos Marcello's networks, New Orleans mafia boss, in organized crime. It included Jack Ruby, who was part of that network, CIA and organized crime. It included Lyndon Baines Johnson, who hated the Kennedy brothers with a passion and succeeded Jack Kennedy and ramped up the war in Vietnam right on schedule, according to command of the military-industrial complex. So that was a real turning point in the nation. The Chief Justice of the Supreme Court, Earl Warren, covered up the facts of that. It was a coming together of a consensus of these patriarchal families to simply assassinate a duly elected president. That has happened before in American history, of course, with Lincoln and other presidents. The assassination in 1963, November, was particularly shocking because with modern communications, everybody could watch that on television, or at least watch a representation of that. So that was a major turning point. That segued right into the Vietnam War. We know what a catastrophe that was. By the way, we have become a new Sparta, the United States. American people are being sent into wars upon wars upon wars. It was Vietnam. Then it was Iraq in 1990-91. Then it was Iraq in or Afghanistan in 2001-2002. Then it was Iraq, supposedly because it had something to do with the World Trade Towers, but nobody in the Bush administration ever bothered to explain. We were so stunned and numbed and hypnotized by power and the frothing mouth of Dick Cheney that we followed them into wars in Iraq, which we had no business doing. And then comes the Arab Spring of Hillary Clinton, where we go to war against Libya, against Gaddafi, against one of the most economically stable, prosperous nations almost in the world, where there was no poverty. Gaddafi had eliminated illiteracy in Libya. The oil was in the control of the state. It did not matter if he pocketed a billion here, a billion there. Most of that was black propaganda from Washington. But the real point is that Gaddafi provided for his people. All different tribes were provided for with the oil revenues, and that the Anglo-American oil companies did not want to have out of their control. So Gaddafi had to go also because, as I note in my most recent article, Gaddafi was in dialogue, in very advanced dialogue, with Ben Ali, the president of Tunisia, and Mubarak, the president of Egypt, to use the 143 tons of gold reserves that Gaddafi had built up with the oil revenues in the Libyan dinar to create a African, Arab, Muslim central bank that would not use interest like the Western banks do and would be backed by gold. Now, gold is... I'm a great friend of gold, but not for the usual reasons that gold bugs talk about. Gold has a magical quality for human beings since the beginning of history. It's a very special metal, and to back a currency by gold is something that is very, very special. And had Gaddafi succeeded in that, and they were in the advanced stage, the dollar... He had detailed plans that Libya would sell its oil, its very high quality, light sweet crude oil, the high demand oil, as in the North Sea, sell it on the world market only for gold-backed dinars. So the West would have to come up, or the importers of Libyan crude oil, with gold-backed dinars, and that would support this new monetary order that would break from the petrodollar system.
Well, I'm so glad you brought up that article, and let me just jump in and say I have it called up here. It was my next question I wanted to ask you, because when we talk about the world order, the new world order, the oligarchs who choose these presidential candidates, the puppets, I would call them, puppets to the oligarchy, we must talk about Hillary Clinton, which you do in this latest article on NEO, Hillary's emails, gold dinars, and Arab Springs. I'm so glad you brought it up, because you write, buried amid tens of thousands of pages of former U.S. Secretary of State Hillary Clinton's secret emails, now being made public by the U.S. government, is a devastating email exchange between Clinton and her confidential advisor, Sid Blumenthal. It's about Gaddafi, and it's about gold and a potential existential threat to the future of the U.S. dollar as world reserve currency. One of the most important paragraphs I've read in recent months here, William, because we talk about the death of the dollar as world reserve currency often, and it's so important to know that Hillary Clinton is truly a criminal who should probably be in prison for her crimes, and she's the one responsible for the crimes against humanity in Libya. So let's just dig into that a little bit, because these oligarchs are giving us Hillary Clinton as a somehow viable choice for president when she's nothing more than a criminal puppet of the establishment.
I'm writing a couple of articles. I've just written one on Trump, and I title that one Mafia Don with the Pompadour. And it's a choice that's being shaped up by the patriarchs, the old boys with big cigars or big somethings in the back room, smoke-filled, to give a choice between hell one and hell two, and they always play their horses with a little bit of excitement and wait until the final stretch to decide who they're going to tilt the balance toward. But Hillary is, since she and Bill Clinton were in Arkansas before he became president in 1992, mm-hmm. Bill Clinton was attorney general of Arkansas before he was governor of Arkansas. And there are documented testimonies that took place, were carried out during the impeachment period. And reporters and journalists went to Arkansas and got this from state troopers who used to guard the governor's office and the attorney general's office of Bill Clinton. And there were CIA airplanes. Barry Seal was one of the pilots involved in this. He's now dead. There were CIA airplanes that came to a special secured airstrip in Arkansas, in Mena, Arkansas,
right,
dropping off plane loads of cocaine to be dumped on the city streets of Los Angeles and other cities, and use that money to finance the Contras in Nicaragua and various other covert operations of the CIA. And Bill Clinton, after the planes landed, the pilots would come into the attorney general's room and put a stack of $100 bills on his desk and walk out. And that is documented. Hillary Clinton not only knew about that, she covered that up, of course. She was with the leading law firm in Little Rock. And the Clinton family has a history of crime going back from probably when Hillary came out of the womb. If she came out of a womb, I'm not sure. She, during the Libya event, Obama is a very indecisive man, and he couldn't decide what to do in Libya because there was a faction saying, we have a responsibility to protect innocent civilians in Libya. What innocent civilians? Here's a stable country that has a high standard of living, no illiteracy, free education, free health care, and they claim Gaddafi was committing genocide. So we have a responsibility to protect. That's a doctrine. It's a bullshit doctrine, if you excuse my French, that was dreamed up by people on the payroll of George Soros's Open Society Foundation to justify a unilateral decision circumventing the United Nations procedure, international law, to say, oh, we have a moral responsibility to protect, so we can go in and bomb Libya back to the Stone Age. So Obama gave the decision back then to Secretary of State Hillary Clinton. She was Samantha Power, and her national security advisor overrode the Joint Chiefs of Staff recommendation to the president, overrode the advice of the director of the CIA and other people in the administration, Robert Gates, Tom Donilon, Obama's security advisor, and John Brennan. The Clinton faction went in there to create this, not responsibility to protect, this creative destruction, as Condi Rice called it. It's the remaking of the Middle East. But Gaddafi in particular had to go because he was the most powerful voice within African nations. He was head of the African National Union, Union of African States, and he was a Muslim, had influence in Tunisia and in Egypt, as I said, and had that gold dinar bank come into being, that would have spelled a major challenge for the dollar. Now that challenge is being rolled out by China and Russia. By the way, China is the number one gold producer in the world, no longer South Africa. South Africa has really declined dramatically in the last 10 years to number seven. Russia is number two in gold production. So they are building, through the Shanghai Cooperation countries in Eurasia, a basis for a new gold-backed group of currencies that will be a major challenge to the survival of the dollar in the future.
Do you see the oligarchs, the banking cartel, targeting those BRICS nations on purpose to try to prevent that? Or is Or is the chicken already out of the cage? I mean, is it too late to stop the decline of the dollar and the demise of the dollar? And at this point, they're just trying to prepare for their one world currency. What is your thought on the future of the dollar?
Well, I don't think they're going to get a one world currency myself. I don't think it's currencies and nations have an inviolable relationship to each other. And that's the problem with the euro that we see since the Greek crisis in 2010. It's not a viable currency because it's not based on nation states. It's based on a supranational, bureaucratic, non-responsible construct. And it's a flawed one, as we're seeing in Europe here in the last 6 years. So the destabilization, the protests and riots that you read about against Dilma Rousseff in Brazil, the president of Brazil, now she's appointed the ex-president Lula, her patron, to be her national, presidential advisor. He thereby gets judicial immunity. But that whole operation, the so-called car wash operation, is a CIA, National Endowment for Democracy, color revolution, because Brazil is a key member of the BRICS countries that just set up a new BRICS development bank for infrastructure with Brazil, Russia, India, China, and South Africa, the five members. So they are trying everything they can. The problem is, the reason I call my newest book The Lost Hegemon, the hegemon, as the Chinese call the leading power in the world, is lost. They don't have a viable strategy. The only thing they do is revert, in terms of Russia and China, they revert to the axioms of the Cold War, and those aren't working. My God, look at what just happened in Syria. It was a very dangerous gamble by Putin and Russia to go into Syria. But what they managed to do, now that they've announced they're going out of Syria, their mission and their goals are substantially accomplished. Washington is sitting there looking like a complete ass. They were covering for ISIS all along, and the Russian intervention exposed that. And within a matter of 4.5 months, they managed to turn the entire situation around there. I don't think it's viable because Syria has been so destroyed by Hillary Clinton's friends with the color revolution and the Libya kind of destruction. But that's another subject.
Yeah, well, you've tied it all together nicely. We've gone from the death and destruction at Hillary Clinton's hands in Libya to the death and destruction at her hands, and of course, John Kerry's hands in Syria. And on page 3 of your new book, The Lost Hegemon, which you guys can buy right now at Amazon, but on page 3, you write, ISIS, later calling itself IS, had been created as a joint project by the CIA and Israeli Mossad to combine psychotic mercenaries posing as Islamic jihadists gathered from all around the world. And what I want to do for you right now, William, is play a piece from a shocking new video that comes to us by way of We Are Change. And this was released by the Syrian military. I'm sure you've heard about this already, but if you haven't, this new video comes from the city of Palmyra in Syria, where Syrian military forces uncovered ISIS headquarters in that city. And here's what they discovered. Listen to this.
And what they have discovered is shocking. They discovered passports from Saudi Arabia and Tunisia, German-made state-of-the-art hospital equipment, Turkish medical supplies, homemade explosives with components directly from Saudi Arabia with the Saudi Arabian logo on them, AK-47s and munitions from Saudi Arabia that had been previously bought from them from Yugoslavia, as well as military uniforms from Turkey and Saudi Arabia. In this war of terror against ISIS, the United States allies are Turkey, are Saudi Arabia, are Germany, and here you see ISIS with all of the supplies from this country in their headquarters in this city of Palmyra.
I wanted to play that for you, William, because it's now evident to anybody paying attention, right? Anybody who thinks at all outside the mainstream media mockingbird box that this government, the State Department, the CIA, not only created ISIS, but is using ISIS and their mercenaries in the Middle East to topple governments, to topple sovereign nations, as all part of this neocon New American Century plan that they rolled out after 9/11. And it seems to me, at least, that Putin stopped them in Syria. Is that your take? And why has Putin chosen to exit Syria at this point?
I think it's a brilliant and a very necessary move that he did this. It's caught everybody in the West off guard. They don't know what to do except to try to mumble something about, well, let's see if he really pulls them out, but they're pulling out. Number one, for Russian security, it was a perfect timing to get out. I said so. I was in Moscow, interviewed by Channel One a week and a half ago, and I said pretty much that this is a highly dangerous situation. There is no possibility of stability and peace in Syria at this point, and we should have no illusions about that. I think the Russians realized that full well and decided to this was the optimal moment where they could go out on a winning note, so to speak, of having made a positive intervention and say, now let's sit down at the diplomatic table. I don't think the Syria war is by any means over. I would expect probably sometime in May or June some dramatic things to happen, quote unquote, happen in Syria and also in Iraq that will give President Obama the excuse to finally send boots on the ground. I hate that expression. It's not soldiers anymore, it's boots, because the soldiers are no longer living human beings, I guess. They're zombied up by the Pentagon. It's really tragic, but that's the reality. So I think there's going to be a American involvement like there was in Iraq in 2003 in Syria, whatever pretext they dream up to do it, with Saudis, with the Turkish and so forth. And now the declaration of autonomy by the Syrian Kurds, it's a mad move in my view, because now they're fighting a two-front war before they could get the backing of Russia and also of Damascus, Assad, against ISIS. Now they've declared autonomy, and so now they have not only the remains of ISIS in Syria, but they have Erdogan's Turkey, who wants to genocide the Kurds, and they have the Damascus government of Assad and the Syrian National Army fighting with them. So I don't know what's going on there, but something very dramatic, I have a gut feeling, is going to blow in Syria that will completely change the whole thing. And I think it could be one of the most dramatic things since 9/11. What, I cannot say, but I have that gut feeling. And usually when I have a strong gut feeling of this sort, it unfortunately turns out to be accurate.
Well, that's not good news, but maybe what is that we can agree on the fact that Putin has exposed these people, correct? I mean, he's
That's
exposed
certainly
to the
correct.
world what these people have been up to.
Yeah. And I think Russia has shown the world that Russia is not a Saddam Hussein Iraq or a Gaddafi Libya in terms of a military might. It's the, in some respects, the most formidable military power on the face of the earth. They have done innovations in their military technology in the last 15 years, quietly and effectively, that have the Pentagon generals with their jaws on the floor and their trousers too, in some cases, I imagine. It's just very impressive. And what they're doing are, we have these cost-plus Pentagon contracts, so they're, by one estimate, more than $1 trillion of Pentagon waste that no, there's no GAO accounting of the Pentagon. They've been told to do it time and again, and they refuse. They're a law unto themselves. The military-industrial complex that Eisenhower warned about on his farewell speech in 1961 has, together with the Wall Street banks behind them, has created a kind of a silent coup d'etat, if you will. America is no longer anything closely resembling a democracy. It's an oligarchy where the patriarchs like Soros, Gates, and Rockefeller, do as they please and use the American people as their cannon fodder.
Yeah,
I don't,
oh, go ahead.
yeah.
Well, I
No,
want
I don't think that's a very good arrangement, personally.
No, and I 100% agree with you. Now, let me ask you this before we let you go. I have to mention Trump, simply because we see these same powers, Rockefeller, Soros foundations aligned against him. And in fact, the entire GOP establishment aligned against him. And I should play this soundbite for you from CNBC that just came out. I believe it was on Wednesday or Thursday of this past week, in which a member of the Republican National Committee of the RNC Rules Committee says this. Listen to this.
Okay, I understand that these are the rules and that there's all kinds of crazy arcane rules that could be voted on between now and then. But Curley, let me ask you, if Donald Trump heads into the nomination, maybe he's short of the 1237 required. If you give it to someone who has a much lesser percentage of the voters who have actually turned out from these primaries, don't you worry that you are going to just send chaos and anger into the Trump supporters, into the people who feel like their votes don't matter?
No, I don't think that's the case. Once it's, if it would just be understood, we have a problem with the media. Unfortunately, the cable networks are trying to determine.
I don't think this is a problem with the media. I've heard from a lot of voters who say if they feel like their votes got stolen, that they would be very unhappy and very angry. I think you're looking at a different situation. I realize these have been the rules, but the last time these rules were put in place was 1976. It's been a long time since then.
Yeah, they're still there. Yeah, that's the problem. The media has created the perception that the voters will decide the nomination, and that's the conflict. That's the conflict here.
We feel like we live in a democratic society. What you're telling me is it's not a democratic society, and your votes don't necessarily matter because it's a democratic representation. Correct?
I'm going to pause it there because it really it's astounding. And the point is that these people despise Donald Trump. My thesis has been for several years now that they wanted to give us Hillary Clinton and Jeb Bush, two false choices, two puppets of the oligarchy in 2016. Jeb Bush couldn't cut it. Rubio couldn't cut it. Ted Cruz is stumbling. And so we have Trump. And I've said Trump is either the real deal to some extent, or he's a Trojan horse. What's your take on all this Trump stuff? Why does the establishment hate him so much?
I think a lot of that is hooey about the establishment hating him. They could have finished him off. I have an article coming out very shortly on NEO, A Mafia Don with a Pompadour. That's Donald Trump. Going back to when he was in his 20s, his father was a construction magnate in Queens, where Trump was born, after the war. And you don't become big in New York City construction without being very friendly with the mob. That's well known up until the present day.
Right.
Everything in Trump's career has mob connections to it. Whenever he's asked about it, Roy Cohn was his first attorney until he died of AIDS in 1986, and Trump was by his side. They used to go to cocaine parties at Studio 54 in Manhattan in the late 60s and the 70s. People may not remember Studio 54, but Roy Cohn was the lawyer for that. Roy Cohn is one of the mob's favorite attorneys. He invited the Genovese mob into his law offices so he would have lawyer-client privilege that they wouldn't have to be forced to testify, or he wouldn't have to be about his relations to the family. So Donald Trump is up to his eyeballs in casino gambling. This is the Red Cross. This is the Boy Scouts of America doing charity work. He had Resorts International in the Bahamas, which was a CIA Meyer Lansky connected operation that then got legalized gambling in Atlantic City because they wanted to spread out the money washing was getting so big in volume they couldn't wash it all in one place in Las Vegas. So they got Atlantic City, and Donald Trump was the so-called clean boy who came in there and opened up the Taj Mahal and all these crazy casinos in Atlantic City to wash mob money. And every time he's asked, he says, I can't recall that name. I may have seen him in one of my casinos, but, there were many people that came through there. Well, either Donald Trump has a case of Alzheimer's or amnesia or something, in which case he's not fit to even be the White House gardener, or the stories are true and he's mob up to his eyeballs, and in that case he's a national security threat and ought not to come in. But this is documented public information that I'm telling you. It's just not being put up there in a way that could go for the kill and kill the candidacy of Donald Trump by the mainstream media. So there's a funny fix in by Trump. Who's behind Trump? Well, now I read in the Israeli press today that Sheldon Adelson, a casino billionaire who's got casinos in Macau, offshore China, and also in Las Vegas, the money bags of Netanyahu in Israel, as well as the money bags of Mitt Romney in Romney's last campaign. And someone asked him, would you consider giving campaign money to Donald Trump? And he answered, why not? So you get an idea of what this Trump candidacy is. I think it's a candidacy. Well, first of all, his rhetoric, his campaign rhetoric is demagogy suitable to someone like Mussolini. Right. His politics are suitable to someone like Mussolini. Put up a wall on the Mexican border. I agree that borders are important and you have to have rules, strict rules about who can come into your country and not let these, you know, known criminals free because they're Mexican or Central American illegals. That's what the Obama administration is doing. And there's a big plot afoot. The Vatican, the Pope himself is involved in this, in trying to feed this idea that there should be no borders. We're all one happy humanity. We should all hug each other. Pope Francis, last summer, when this crisis hit Germany with 1 million refugees pouring in from everywhere, the Pope said if every German family would take just one refugee in their home, the problem would be solved. My God, can you imagine what kind of culture clashes? Look at the explosion that happened in Cologne on New Year's Eve with women being raped by mobs of hundreds of North African Muslim refugees that were going wild. So, you know, this is an attempt by very, very conscious networks to destroy not just borders, but to destroy stability and the foundations of European civilization going back more than 1,000 years. And that's a pretty big thing that's going on. I think Trump is more connected to that Vatican wing, that Opus Dei and such. It's very difficult to prove because these are highly secret organizations. Anyone knows who saw the Da Vinci Code movie, which is a fictive account of Opus Dei. But anyway, that's what we're dealing with. And Hillary Clinton is another branch of organized crime, if you will, the Bush family. Bill Clinton and Bush go back way, way back.
That's right. Yeah, I've often said that the Clintons were created by the Bushes in the Bush crime family. Of course, Grandpa Bush, Prescott Bush, was a Wall Street industrialist and an attempted a fascist coup of the U.S. government back in the 30s. And that's all.
Well, he supported Hitler. He aided and abetted the Third Reich in the wartime.
Yeah, it's well documented. And I guess the take here on Trump is that he is an establishment provided vent for the anger that is bubbling over in the United States, the anger at the establishment and all their crimes. The crimes are in the wide open now. And even people who don't study your work or listen to my interviews and go to SGT Report can feel it. They know something's wrong. They know the government's corrupt. They want to take the government back. And the establishment is providing them Trump, I guess.
I think that there's a lot of truth to that, but we the 99.9% of people in the population, we tend to be hypnotized by the illusion of power. And that's our problem. We see ourselves as victims. In fact, I was thinking of suggesting a political pact called Victims for Trump. You know, I'm a victim of the bad government of Obama. I'm a victim of this, victim of that. Instead of seeing that we can not only recapture the organs of government, but we can do a lot more. We can make, where's Trump's program? Let me just give one example. Where is Donald Trump's program to make America great, to address the $3.6 trillion infrastructure deficit that the American Society of Engineers has estimated for rebuilding roads, bridges, highways, water, sewage systems and waterways, electric grid and whatnot? The patriarchs of Wall Street and the military industry complex have outsourced, and they don't have any interest in investing in the real infrastructure of America that made it, back in the 50s and the 60s, when I remember, made it the greatest industrial nation in the world. We invented, we created, now that's being done elsewhere. It's being done in Russia. It's being done in many other countries, in China and so forth. But we are allowing them to kill us as a functioning people and a functioning nation. All it takes is to snap out of the hypnosis and say, these people are clowns and idiots, like Mafia Don with a pompadour and Hillary Clinton. My God, what a joke she is as a potential president. It's just, a liar with every time she opens her mouth.
Yeah, no, our prospects are horrifying. And, all it takes is for the people to wake up. But then wake up and do what? Because we just heard from a GOP representative that they'll steal it from anybody that they're, quote unquote, threatened by. There is no recourse. There is no rule of law. We see what's happening in the nation in which you reside, in Germany, as they let those refugees flood in and open the borders and cause absolute chaos, which is all by plan. It's all on purpose. What can we really do? What can we do? What actions can we take, William, to prevent and stop and to put an end to this and to take our nations back?
Well, that's I can't put out a roadmap. That has to come from millions and millions of people who are suddenly snapping out of the trance. But because it all of this is a trance, and have a different perspective on reality that's going on around us. If we do that, we don't like to do that because we fear it could be true, and therefore we feel good when somebody says William Engdahl is a conspiracy theorist. Oh, thank God, and I don't have to think about the fact that he might be right. And that's the purpose of this soothing kind of calm, like your psychiatrist does to tell you everything will be all right and so forth. It doesn't do a damn thing. So it can happen in a million and a billion different ways. What can we do? That's a creative process. First, we have to rediscover the good in us as American people. And this may sound silly, but it's absolutely the secret. And I know it from my own experience. And once we refine the good in us, we don't listen to jackasses like Donald Trump or candidates like Hillary Clinton, who are non-human. But we will create other solutions, third parties, fourth parties, whatever. Early American history is filled with some beautiful examples. My own grandfather was a leading member of something in North Dakota called the Nonpartisan League around the time of World War I, Charles Lindbergh, La Follette in Wisconsin, and so forth. And they actually put a senator into Washington during the Depression who introduced legislation to re-nationalize the Federal Reserve, repeal the Federal Reserve Act of 1913. So that happened in one small state of the 50 United States. Many things like that are possible. We just have to be creative. We have to believe in the good in us and project that outward. And that it's as simple as that, and it's as complicated as that, because we have come as a nation, as a people, we've become confused, we've become bitter, angry, everything that Donald Trump demagogically pulls out of the population that's behind him. And we've forgotten that we're basically good. We don't need to be the cop of the world. We don't need to bomb Libya to the Stone Age. We don't need to bomb Syria back to the Stone Age. We don't need to bomb Iraq back to the Stone Age. We don't need to destroy Ukraine in order to drive a wedge between Germany and Russia and demonize Vladimir Putin. I've been to Russia many, many, many times. I've been to China many, many, many times in the last years. And I can tell you, they look at the United States and scratch their head and say, what has gone on with this country?
Yeah. Well, the American people have lost their way. And unfortunately, lost their minds and lost their way, because unfortunately, so many people feel that we are part of the empire, right? And they've drank the Kool-Aid, which suggests that we need to take the war overseas before the war comes to our shores. And of course, the establishment uses 9/11 as the excuse for everything. And unless you're awake and aware, and unless people can read books like yours, William, they're never going to wake up, because too many American people have drank the Kool-Aid and believe that this empire includes them. But this empire long ago threw the regular Joe overboard.
Yeah, well, that I think the realization is growing dramatically over the past several years that they've been thrown overboard. The point is what to do about it, and Donald Trump is not what to do about it.
Well, one thing people can do is, and I want people to please support William's work. I mean, what an intellectual, what an honest man, what a truth teller. The opposite of a conspiracy theorist, he's a conspiracy researcher who has proven the goods. And please do get his latest book. It's called The Lost Hegemon, Whom the Gods Would Destroy. William, can you tell us a little bit more about the book and where people can buy it?
Yeah, it's available. I don't have a list because I'm over here in Germany, but it's available through Amazon. If they go onto my website, the best in terms of supporting me and my work is to click on the book title. It's in the top of my website, williamengdahl.com, as one word, williamengdahl.com. And you will buy it through the Amazon subsidiary Create Space. And that's actually a little bit better for me, but otherwise on Amazon. And the book essentially documents ISIS is a product of a CIA covert operation that went back to the 1950s under the Eisenhower administration. Miles Copeland, the CIA station chief in Cairo, brought the leadership of a secret society, a death cult called the Muslim Brotherhood, from Egypt, where they were founded in 1928, and smuggled them out of Egypt, because they had a price on their head after trying to assassinate President Nasser, into Saudi Arabia. And there was a marriage made in hell, as I call it in the book, between the political activism of the Muslim Brotherhood death cult. To kill an infidel in the name of Allah is the highest glory. And that morphed with Saudi oil money into a worldwide network in Afghanistan, in Pakistan, and so forth, and up until the present day, where we see ISIS suddenly appearing out of the blue. Well, it didn't appear out of the blue. Al-Qaeda was created by this network of Saudis and CIA back in the 1980s in Afghanistan. It was called Mujahideen to fight against the Soviet Red Army. Then they were shipped by CIA aircraft into Azerbaijan when the Soviet Union collapsed in 1990, into Azerbaijan to take control of the country's political leadership, to control the Baku oil fields, with British Petroleum now in control of that. And then they were brought into Chechnya in Russia and made the war against Moscow central leadership in Chechnya in the 90s, two wars actually, to destabilize Russia, the Russian Federation. Then they were brought into Bosnia when the U.S. dismemberment of Yugoslavia was in high gear. These terrorists were brought into Bosnia, which used to be one-third Muslim, one-third Croat Catholic, and one-third Serbian Orthodox. So they created around Begovic, their man as puppet president, who was a Muslim Brotherhood. They created this control of the country as a so-called Muslim country, forgetting the fact that two-thirds before the war were non-Muslim. So this goes right into Syria, right into Libya, right into the whole Arab Spring and so forth. It's a huge, huge thing. And the book is essentially about this. It reads like a crime novel, in effect. And only when you piece this whole thing together do you have a grip on what this ISIS is, or al-Nusra, al-Qaeda in Syria and Iraq and so forth. And it's, on the one hand, a fascinating history, if it weren't causing so much hate, killing and murder and rape in the world. But it's an important history, and people should know that, because it's still on. Probably sometime in May or June, some dramatic things to happen, quote unquote, happen in Syria and also in Iraq that will give President Obama the excuse to finally send boots on the ground. I hate that expression. It's not soldiers anymore, it's boots, because the soldiers are no longer living human beings, I guess. They're zombied up by the Pentagon. It's really tragic, but that's the reality. Right. So I think there's going to be a American involvement like there was in Iraq in 2003 in Syria, whatever pretext they dream up to do it, with Saudis, with the Turkish and so forth. And now the declaration of autonomy by the Syrian Kurds. It's a mad move, in my view, because now they're fighting a two-front war before they could get the backing of Russia and also of Damascus, Assad, against ISIS. Now they've declared autonomy. And so now they have not only the remains of ISIS in Syria, but they have Erdogan's Turkey, who wants to genocide the Kurds. And they have the Damascus government of Assad and the Syrian National Army fighting with them. So I don't know what's going on there. But something very dramatic, I have a gut feeling, is going to blow in Syria that will completely change the whole thing. And I think it could be one of the most dramatic things since 9/11. What, I cannot say, but I have that gut feeling. And usually when I have a strong gut feeling of this sort, it unfortunately turns out to be accurate.
Well, that's not good news, but maybe what is that we can agree on the fact that Putin has exposed these people, correct? I mean, he's exposed to the world what these people have been up to.
Yeah, and I think Russia has shown the world that Russia is not a Saddam Hussein Iraq or a Gaddafi Libya in terms of a military might. It's the, in some respects, the most formidable military power on the face of the earth. They have done innovations in their military technology in the last 15 years, quietly and effectively, that have the Pentagon generals with their jaws on the floor and their trousers too, in some cases, I imagine. It's just very impressive. And what they're doing are, we have these cost-plus Pentagon contracts, so they're, by one estimate, more than $1 trillion of Pentagon waste that there's no GAO accounting of the Pentagon. They've been told to do it time and again, and they refuse. They're a law unto themselves. Right. The military-industrial complex that Eisenhower warned about on his farewell speech in 1961 has, together with the Wall Street banks behind them, has created a kind of a silent coup d'etat, if you will. America is no longer anything closely resembling a democracy. It's an oligarchy where the patriarchs like Soros, Gates, and Rockefeller, do as they please and use the American people as their cannon fodder.
Yeah, I want. Oh, go ahead.
Yeah.
Well, I
want. No, I don't think that's a very good arrangement, personally.
No, and I 100% agree with you. Now, let me ask you this before we let you go. I have to mention Trump simply because we see these same powers, Rockefeller, Soros Foundations, aligned against him. And in fact, the entire GOP establishment aligned against him. And I should play this soundbite for you from CNBC that just came out. I believe it was on Wednesday or Thursday of this past week, in which a member of the Republican National Committee of the RNC Rules Committee says this. Listen to this.
Okay, I understand that these are the rules and that there's all kinds of crazy arcane rules that could be voted on between now and then. But Curley, let me ask you, if Donald Trump heads into the nomination, maybe he's short of the 1237 required, if you give it to someone who has a much lesser percentage of the voters who have actually turned out for these primaries, don't you worry that you are going to just send chaos and anger into the Trump supporters, into the people who feel like their votes don't matter?
No, I don't think that's the case. If it would just be understood, we have a problem with the media. Unfortunately, the cable networks are trying to determine.
I don't think this is a problem with the media. I've heard from a lot of voters who say if they feel like their votes got stolen, that they would be very unhappy and very angry. I think you're looking at a different situation. I realize these have been the rules, but the last time these rules were put in place was 1976. It's been a long time since then.
Yeah, they're still there. Yeah, that's the problem. The media has created the perception that the voters will decide the nomination, and that's the conflict here.
We feel like we live in a democratic society. What you're telling me is it's not a democratic society, and your votes don't necessarily matter because it's a democratic representation, correct?
I'm going to pause it there because, it really it's astounding, and the point is that these people despise Donald Trump. My thesis has been for several years now that they wanted to give us Hillary Clinton and Jeb Bush, two false choices, two puppets of the oligarchy in 2016. Jeb Bush couldn't cut it. Rubio couldn't cut it. Ted Cruz is stumbling. And so we have Trump. And I've said Trump is either the real deal to some extent, or he's a Trojan horse. What's your take on all this Trump stuff? Why does the establishment hate him so much?
I think a lot of that is hooey about the establishment hating him. They could have finished him off. I have an article coming out very shortly on NEO, A Mafia Don with a Pompadour. That's Donald Trump. Going back to when he was in his 20s, his father was a construction magnate in Queens, where Trump was born, after the war. And you don't become big in New York City construction without being very friendly with the mob. That's well known up until the present day.
Right.
Everything in Trump's career has mob connections to it. Whenever he's asked about it, Roy Cohn was his first attorney until he died of AIDS in 1986, and Trump was by his side. They used to go to cocaine parties at Studio 54 in Manhattan in the late 60s and the 70s. People may not remember Studio 54, but Roy Cohn was the lawyer for that. Roy Cohn is was one of the mob's favorite attorneys. He invited the Genovese mob into his law offices so he would have lawyer-client privilege that they wouldn't have to be forced to testify. And he was a Muslim, had influence in Tunisia and in Egypt, as I said, and had that gold dinar bank come into being, that would have spelled a major challenge for the dollar. Now that challenge is being rolled out by China and Russia. By the way, China is the number one gold producer in the world, no longer South Africa. South Africa has really declined dramatically in the last 10 years to number seven. Russia is number two in gold production. So they are building, through the Shanghai Cooperation countries in Eurasia, a basis for a new gold-backed group of currencies that will be a major challenge to the survival of the dollar in the future.
Do you see the oligarchs, the banking cartel, targeting those BRICS nations on purpose to try to prevent that? Or is the chicken already out of the cage? I mean, is it too late to stop the decline of the dollar and the demise of the dollar? And at this point, they're just trying to prepare for their one world currency. What is your thought on the future of the dollar?
Well, I don't think they're going to get a one world currency myself. I don't think it's currencies and nations have an inviolable relationship to each other. And that's the problem with the euro that we see since the Greek crisis in 2010. It's not a viable currency because it's not based on nation states. It's based on a supranational, bureaucratic, non-responsible construct, and it's a flawed one, as we're seeing in Europe here in the last 6 years. So the destabilization, the protests and riots that you read about against Dilma Rousseff in Brazil, the president of Brazil, now she's appointed the ex-president Lula, her patron, to be her national, presidential advisor. He thereby gets judicial immunity. But that whole operation, the so-called car wash operation, is a CIA, National Endowment for Democracy, color revolution, because Brazil is a key member of the BRICS countries that just set up a new BRICS development bank for infrastructure with Brazil, Russia, India, China, and South Africa, the five members. So they are trying everything they can. The problem is, the reason I call my newest book The Lost Hegemon, the hegemon, as the Chinese call the leading power in the world, is lost. They don't have a viable strategy. The only thing they do is revert. In terms of Russia and China, they revert to the axioms of the Cold War, and those aren't working. My God, look at what just happened in Syria. It was a very dangerous gamble by Putin and Russia to go into Syria. But what they managed to do, now that they've announced they're going out of Syria, their mission and their goals are substantially accomplished. Washington is sitting there looking like a complete ass. They were covering for ISIS all along, and the Russian intervention exposed that, and within a matter of 4.5 months, they managed to turn the entire situation around there. I don't think it's viable because Syria has been so destroyed by Hillary Clinton's friends with the color revolution and the Libya kind of destruction, but that's another subject.
Yeah, well, you've tied it all together nicely. We've gone from the death and destruction at Hillary Clinton's hands in Libya to the death and destruction at her hands and, of course, John Kerry's hands in Syria. And on page 3 of your new book, The Lost Hegemon, which you guys can buy right now at Amazon, but on page 3 you write, ISIS, later calling itself IS, had been created as a joint project by the CIA and Israeli Mossad to combine psychotic mercenaries posing as Islamic jihadists gathered from all around the world. And what I want to do for you right now, William, is play a piece from a shocking new video that comes to us by way of We Are Change. And this was released by the Syrian military. I'm sure you've heard about this already, but if you haven't, this new video comes from the city of Palmyra in Syria, where Syrian military forces uncovered ISIS headquarters in that city. And here's what they discovered. Listen to this.
And what they have discovered is shocking. They discovered passports from Saudi Arabia and Tunisia, German-made state-of-the-art hospital equipment, Turkish medical supplies, homemade explosives with components directly from Saudi Arabia with the Saudi Arabian logo on them, AK-47s and munitions from Saudi Arabia that have been previously bought from them from Yugoslavia, as well as military uniforms from Turkey and Saudi Arabia. In this war of terror against ISIS, the United States allies are Turkey, are Saudi Arabia, are Germany, and here you see ISIS with all of the supplies from this country in their headquarters in this city of Palmyra.
I wanted to play that for you, William, because it's now evident to anybody paying attention, right? Anybody who thinks at all outside the mainstream media mockingbird box, that this government, the State Department, the CIA, not only created ISIS, but is using ISIS and their mercenaries in the Middle East to topple governments, to topple sovereign nations, as all part of this neocon New American Century plan that they rolled out after 9/11. And it seems to me, at least, that Putin stopped them in Syria. Is that your take? And why has Putin chosen to exit Syria at this point?
I think it's a brilliant and a very necessary move that he did this. It's caught everybody in the West off guard. They don't know what to do except to try to mumble something about, well, let's see if he really pulls them out, but they're pulling out. number one, for Russian security, it was a perfect timing to get out. I said so. I was in Moscow, interviewed by Channel One a week and a half ago, and I said pretty much that this is a highly dangerous situation. There is no possibility of stability and peace in Syria at this point, and we should have no illusions about that. I think the Russians realized that full well and decided this was the optimal moment where they could go out on a winning note, so to speak, of having made a positive intervention and say, now let's sit down at the diplomatic table. I don't think the Syria war is by any means over. I would expect he wouldn't have to be about his relations to the family. So Donald Trump is up to his eyeballs in casino gambling. This is the Red Cross. This is the Boy Scouts of America doing charity work. He had Resorts International in the Bahamas, which was a CIA Meyer Lansky connected operation that then got legalized gambling in Atlantic City because they wanted to spread out the money washing was getting so big in volume they couldn't wash it all in one place in Las Vegas. So they got Atlantic City, and Donald Trump was the so-called clean boy who came in there and opened up the Taj Mahal and all these crazy casinos in Atlantic City to wash mob money. And every time he's asked, he says, I can't recall that name. I may have seen him in one of my casinos, but, you know, there were many people that came through there. Well, either Donald Trump has a case of Alzheimer's or amnesia or something, in which case he's not fit to even be the White House gardener, or the stories are true and he's mob up to his eyeballs, and in that case he's a national security threat and ought not to come in. But this is documented public information that I'm telling you. It's just not being put up there in a way that could go for the kill and kill the candidacy of Donald Trump by the mainstream media. So there's a funny fix-in by Trump. Who's behind Trump? Well, now I read in the Israeli press today that Sheldon Adelson, a casino billionaire who's got casinos in Macau, offshore China, and also in Las Vegas, the money bags of Netanyahu in Israel, as well as the money bags of Mitt Romney in Romney's last campaign. And someone asked him, would you consider giving campaign money to Donald Trump? And he answered, why not? So you get an idea of what this Trump candidacy is. I think it's a candidacy. Well, first of all, his rhetoric, his campaign rhetoric is demagogy suitable to someone like Mussolini.
Right.
His politics are suitable to someone like Mussolini. Put up a wall on the Mexican border. I agree that borders are important and you have to have rules, strict rules about who can come into your country and not let these, you know, known criminals free because they're Mexican or Central American illegals. That's what the Obama administration is doing. And there's a big plot afoot. The Vatican, the Pope himself is involved in this, in trying to feed this idea that there should be no borders. We're all one happy humanity. We should all hug each other. Pope Francis, last summer, when this crisis hit Germany with 1 million refugees pouring in from everywhere, the Pope said if every German family would take just one refugee in their home, the problem would be solved. My God, can you imagine what kind of culture clashes? Look at the explosion that happened in Cologne on New Year's Eve with women being raped by mobs of hundreds of North African Muslim refugees that were going wild. So, you know, this is an attempt by very, very conscious networks to destroy not just borders, but to destroy stability and the foundations of European civilization going back more than 1,000 years. And that's a pretty big thing that's going on. I think Trump is more connected to that Vatican wing, that Opus Dei and such. Is very difficult to prove because these are highly secret organizations. Anyone knows who saw the Da Vinci Code movie, which is a fictive account of Opus Dei. But anyway, that's what we're dealing with. And Hillary Clinton is another branch of organized crime, if you will, the Bush family. Bill Clinton and Bush go back way, way back.
That's right. Yeah, I've often said that the Clintons were created by the Bushes in the Bush crime family. Of course, Grandpa Bush, Prescott Bush, was a Wall Street industrialist and attempted a fascist coup of the U.S. government back in the 30s. And that's all.
Well, he supported Hitler. He aided and abetted the Third Reich in the wartime.
Yeah, it's well documented. And I guess the take here on Trump is that he is an establishment provided vent for the anger that is bubbling over in the United States, the anger at the establishment and all their crimes. The crimes are in the wide open now. And even people who don't study your work or listen to my interviews and go to SGT Report can feel it. They know something's wrong. They know the government's corrupt. They want to take the government back. And the establishment is providing them Trump, I guess.
I think that there's a lot of truth to that, but we the 99.9% of people in the population, we tend to be hypnotized by the illusion of power, and that's our problem. We see ourselves as victims. In fact, I was thinking of suggesting a political pact called Victims for Trump. You know, I'm a victim of the bad government of Obama. I'm a victim of this, victim of that. Instead of seeing that we can not only recapture the organs of government, but we can do a lot more. We can make, where's Trump's program? Let me just give one example. Where is Donald Trump's program to make America great, to address the $3.6 trillion infrastructure deficit that the American Society of Engineers has estimated for building, rebuilding roads, bridges, highways, water, sewage systems and waterways, electric grid and whatnot? The patriarchs of Wall Street and the military industry complex have outsourced, and they don't have any interest in investing in the real infrastructure of America that made it, back in the 50s and the 60s, when I remember, made it the greatest industrial nation in the world. We invented, we created, now that's being done elsewhere. It's being done in Russia. It's being done in many other countries, in China and so forth. But we are allowing them to kill us as a functioning people and a functioning nation. All it takes is to snap out of the hypnosis and say, these people are clowns and idiots, like Mafia Don with a pompadour and Hillary Clinton. My God, what a joke she is as a potential president. It's just, a liar with every time she opens her mouth.
Yeah, no, our prospects are horrifying. And, all it takes is for the people to wake up, but then wake up. And his new book just released, called The Lost Hegemon, Whom the Gods Would Destroy. And it's just my distinct pleasure to welcome William Engel. How are you, sir?
Very well, thank you, Mike.
And I should also note that Joseph P. Farrell is a big fan of yours and cites your articles from New Eastern Outlook often in his video reports. And we're big fans of Joseph P. Farrell as well. I'm often corrected by listeners when I refer to the New World Order, as of course George Bush Sr. did, some 220 times as president. And I'm often told by my readers and viewers that it's nothing more than an old world order, a group of banking families, oligarchs, and intelligence agencies that have been in control for centuries. Does that pretty much sum it up?
Well, I think you can go back 5,000 years in the history of debt if you want to talk about the world order of the plutocracy and oligarchy, the control of every political process by a tiny self-selected elite and so forth, a patriarchy, the American patriarchy, David Rockefeller, George Soros, Bill Gates, people like this. And the game is essentially the same. They ruin nations. The Roman Empire collapsed 400 AD for much the same reasons that the American century is collapsing today. It's internal rot because the banks, step by step over the past, and this is the theme really of my book, The Gods of Money. It's not just the 2008 financial crash and subprime mortgage mess, but it's the history of how America was hijacked in a silent coup d'etat by Wall Street bankers. And they just spit their tongue out at the American population and say, you can't do anything. We're too big to fail. And that's you can go back in history to every failed great nation, and it's always due to this internal rot because of usury, because of the misuse of interest and money and banking. The state gives away control of printing money, the most precious sovereign quality that a state can have. U.S. did it in 1913 when Woodrow Wilson committed treason against the Constitution and signed the Federal Reserve Act. But that's basically the case. It's a very old world game. It goes back to the Babylonians. You can pick any example you want. I prefer the Romans because it's culturally so similar to the internal rot of American culture in my lifetime, since I can visibly feel it since the 1950s when I grew up.
Yeah, well, let me ask you this, though. It feels like we've gone off the rails at a faster and faster pace just over the past decade, you know, since 9/11. When do you think which silent coup do you think was most effective? You mentioned the one in 1913 with the establishment of the Federal Reserve. Certainly the bankers have done a heck of a job enslaving this nation. We're now $19 trillion in debt. I've often cited the assassination of President John F. Kennedy as another nail in the coffin of our constitutional republic. Was that the most effective silent coup, or was it 9/11 itself that really put the nail in the coffin?
I would agree with all,
yeah.
If I may. The assassination of JFK, I mentioned this in an article that should be out in the next days on NEO. The assassination of Kennedy was a major turning point in the country. The networks who committed that assassination included Alan Dulles' networks at the CIA. It included Carlos Marcello's networks, New Orleans mafia boss, in organized crime. It included Jack Ruby, who was part of that network, CIA and organized crime. It included Lyndon Baines Johnson, who hated the Kennedy brothers with a passion and succeeded Jack Kennedy and ramped up the war in Vietnam right on schedule, according to command of the military-industrial complex. So that was a real turning point in the nation. The Chief Justice of the Supreme Court, Earl Warren, covered up the facts of that. It was a coming together of a consensus of these patriarchal families to simply assassinate a duly elected president. That has happened before in American history, of course, with Lincoln and other presidents. The assassination in 1963, November, was particularly shocking because with modern communications, everybody could watch that on television, or at least watch a representation of that. So that was a major turning point. That segued right into the Vietnam War. We know what a catastrophe that was. By the way, we have become a new Sparta, the United States. American people are being sent into wars upon wars upon wars. It was Vietnam, then it was Iraq in 1990-91, then it was Iraq in or Afghanistan in 2001-2002, then it was Iraq, supposedly because it had something to do with the World Trade Towers, but nobody in the Bush administration ever bothered to explain. We were so stunned and numbed and hypnotized by power and the frothing mouth of Dick Cheney that we followed them into wars in Iraq, which we had no business doing. And then comes the Arab Spring of Hillary Clinton, where we go to war against Libya, against Gaddafi, against one of the most economically stable, prosperous nations almost in the world, where there was no poverty. Gaddafi had eliminated illiteracy in Libya. The oil was in the control of the state. It did not matter if he pocketed a billion here, a billion there. Most of that was black propaganda from Washington. But the real point is that Gaddafi provided for his people. All different tribes were provided for with the oil revenues. And that the Anglo-American oil companies did not want to have out of their control. So Gaddafi had to go also because, as I note in my most recent article, Gaddafi was in dialogue, in very advanced dialogue, with Ben Ali, the president of Tunisia, and Mubarak, the president of Egypt, to use the 143 tons of gold reserves that Gaddafi had built up with the oil revenues in the Libyan dinar to create a African Arab Muslim central bank that would not use interest like the Western banks do and would be backed by gold. Now, gold is, I'm a great friend of gold, but not for the usual reasons that gold bugs talk about. Gold has a magical quality for human beings since the beginning of history. It's a very special metal, and to back a currency by gold is something that is very, very special. And had Gaddafi succeeded in that, and they were in the advanced stage, the dollar, he had detailed plans that Libya would sell its oil, its very high quality, light sweet crude oil, the high demand oil, as in the North Sea, sell it on the world market only for gold-backed dinars. So the West would have to come up, or the importers of Libyan crude oil, with gold-backed dinars, and that would support this new monetary order that would break from the petrodollar system.
Well, I'm so glad you brought up that article, and let me just jump in and say I have it called up here. It was my next question I wanted to ask you, because when we talk about the world order, the new world order, the oligarchs who choose these presidential candidates, the puppets, I would call them, puppets to the oligarchy, we must talk about Hillary Clinton, which you do in this latest article on NEO, Hillary's emails, gold dinars, and Arab Springs. I'm so glad you brought it up, because you write, buried amid tens of thousands of pages of former U.S. Secretary of State Hillary Clinton's secret emails, now being made public by the U.S. government, is a devastating email exchange between Clinton and her confidential advisor, Sid Blumenthal. It's about Gaddafi, and it's about gold and a potential existential threat to the future of the U.S. dollar as world reserve currency. One of the most important paragraphs I've read in recent months here, William, because we talk about the death of the dollar as world reserve currency often, and it's so important to know that Hillary Clinton is truly a criminal who should probably be in prison for her crimes, and she's the one responsible for the crimes against humanity in Libya. So let's just dig into that a little bit, because these oligarchs are giving us Hillary Clinton as a somehow viable choice for president when she's nothing more than a criminal puppet of the establishment.
I'm writing a couple of articles. I've just written one on Trump, and I title that one Mafia Don with the Pompadour. And it's a choice that's being shaped up by the patriarchs, the old boys with big cigars or big somethings in the back room, smoke-filled, to give a choice between Hell One and Hell Two, and they always play their horses with a little bit of excitement and wait until the final stretch to decide who they're going to tilt the balance toward. But Hillary is, since she and Bill Clinton were in Arkansas before he became president in 1992, mm-hmm. Bill Clinton was Attorney General of Arkansas before he was governor of Arkansas. And there are documented testimonies that took place, were carried out during the impeachment period. And reporters and journalists went to Arkansas and got this from state troopers who used to guard the governor's office and the attorney general's office of Bill Clinton. And there were CIA airplanes. Barry Seal was one of the pilots involved in this. He's now dead. There were CIA airplanes that came to a special secured airstrip in Arkansas, in Mena, Arkansas,
right,
dropping off plane loads of cocaine to be dumped on the city streets of Los Angeles and other cities, and use that money to finance the Contras in Nicaragua and various other covert operations of the CIA. And Bill Clinton, after the planes landed, the pilots would come into the attorney general's room and put a stack of $100 bills on his desk and walk out. And that is documented. Hillary Clinton not only knew about that, she covered that up, of course. She was with the leading law firm in Little Rock. And the Clinton family has a history of crime going back from probably when Hillary came out of the womb. If she came out of a womb, I'm not sure. She, during the Libya event, Obama is a very indecisive man, and he couldn't decide what to do in Libya because there was a faction saying, we have a responsibility to protect innocent civilians in Libya. What innocent civilians? Here's a stable country that has a high standard of living, no illiteracy, free education, free health care, and they claim Gaddafi was committing genocide. So we have a responsibility to protect. That's a doctrine. It's a bullshit doctrine, if you excuse my French, that was dreamed up by people on the payroll of George Soros's Open Society Foundation to justify a unilateral decision circumventing the United Nations procedure, international law, to say, oh, we have a moral responsibility to protect, so we can go in and bomb Libya back to the Stone Age. So Obama gave the decision back then to Secretary of State Hillary Clinton. She was Samantha Power, and her national security advisor overrode the Joint Chiefs of Staff recommendation to the president, overrode the advice of the director of the CIA and other people in the administration, Robert Gates, Tom Donilon, Obama's security advisor, and John Brennan. The Clinton faction went in there to create this, not responsibility to protect, this creative destruction, as Condi Rice called it. It's the remaking of the Middle East, but Gaddafi in particular had to go because he was the most powerful voice within African nations. He was head of the African National Union, Union of African States,